PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golf legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week, it's been a little bit of a ride. I'm not sure. I believe this might be video episode number one for you, buddy, but you've been on a handful of times. His name's Dean DiCrescenzo. He goes by D-Deck over on the forum, the THP forums, but he's also a staff writer on THP, so you'll find his work on the homepage. Every once in a while, a Twitter heckler and a big baseball guy. What's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? You know, usually the face for radio, but you got me on video today. So hope your listenership doesn't go down because of this.
Well, if they keep coming back and I'm on video, I think you'll be fine. I like the new setup, dude. You got a little boom action. You got the mic all set up. Looks good.
Yeah, we dusted it all off. So I'd been using the mic at work to record some like how-to videos. Okay. And then, you know, knowing that we were going to be on camera tonight, I wanted to zhuzh it up a little bit.
Oh, fancy guy.
Fancy.
We're wrapping up 2024. Has it been a good year for you, or has it been another year of golf?
No, 2024 was a good year of golf. I mean, if you think about, you know, we talk usually at the end of each season and where, you know, as I go into hibernation, where I want the game plan to go. And this year I thought, you know, my putting was significantly better. I thought my driving got better. I thought my iron play got a little bit better. Handicap was steady, but got slightly better. But yeah, it was a good year on the course for me. I got out a lot with the fam and had a good time.
Yeah, that's the big kicker, right? Once you get the fam involved all together, you start to add those extra 9-18 hole matches or rounds, and suddenly you're doubling down.
Yeah, exactly. Especially seeing like a little 4-year-old dude running around the course, just having a blast and wanting to hit balls from, you know, 30 yards off the green. He hits it on the green and he like jumps for joy, which I won't lie, if I hit it the green from 30 yards, I kind of do the same. But when I'm with him, I have to act like I've been there before.
Yeah. Well, you're jumping up and down thinking, let's save some of that college money, get a scholarship here.
That's right, buddy.
You said something that I thought was interesting, that the putting's improved. And I believe there's a putter that has a lot to do with that. But let's just circle back for those who haven't had a chance to listen to you or don't remember the last conversation we had. It seemed relatively disappointed with a small component of sadness, I think, was the last version of your putting game. So it's actually worth talking about now.
Demonstrably disastrous, I think.
Yeah, I was trying to think of big words. Yeah.
Well, those are my two big words for the night. So,
okay.
Putting. It was another full year with the Lab Mez 1 Max putter in the bag, and just more time getting comfortable with it, and got used to hitting my lines a little more and some speed control. And I really did. I'm not gonna lie. I bought into the system. I bought into the whole zero torque thing. And now, for the first time in, you know, some time, I'm tinkering with another putter. And I'm not sure if it's going to make the bag full time, but it's an Odyssey square to square number 7 shape. So still has the fangs, which is kind of an easy transition from what I have now. I haven't gotten it on the course. It's just been kind of rolling putts in the basement side by side. It feels really good. And it's going to be kind of a fun battle to see which one comes out in the spring as the first line.
Yeah. It's always been kind of the wild, wild west when it comes to your putter slot. But, you know, the idea that there's momentum with the putter is really exciting. And I would imagine seeing all the sort of reactionary launches that have sort of gone up against the Lab idea have to be pretty interesting from someone who has really bought into and embraced the system as it is.
It really is. It's cool to see all of these companies come out with their own version of it. I don't want to say they're copying them, because I don't think that's necessarily fair, but they have their own little take on it. And We've seen plenty do it. I think Odyssey right now is the most recent, so they're kind of the hottest, most talked about one. The coolest thing for me of having this lab putter is it's been in the bag since fall of 2022. So it's been in the bag for a while. And as it got more use on tour, I don't really have a normal foursome that I play with. I play as a single a lot and just get mixed in with people. And there's so many people out on the course that are like, hey man, what's the deal with that putter? Hey man, I see these guys rolling this on tour. Can I give it a shot? It's really been cool. And for a smaller company to get that kind of momentum to generate buzz and conversation just at like local munis. And now seeing all these other bigger companies, more mainstream companies come out with something that, you know, takes that idea and kind of pushes their own little theory on it. It's pretty cool. It's got to be cool for Lab to see that, but they've also got to be kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's our stuff, man.
Well, you mentioned Odyssey, and I think I saw Bettinardi come out with a version of, I believe. So it's not like it's one or two. It seems to be that this will be a reaction from most companies looking to sell putters that this is a viable option. What I think is interesting, and this is the vibe I got, was it's not necessarily a brand new concept. It's just more welcomed because some of the times that this idea has been brought up, I would say mallets haven't exactly been at the forefront of everyone's mind, but like it's 2024, we're going into 25. Like if you're not using a mallet at this point, most would argue you haven't been fit or you're just really invested in your blade, because there are a lot of benefits to the mallet. So the idea it's become more mainstream, it almost welcomes the opportunity for some of these companies who maybe have tried in the past and their ideas either were a little bit off visually or didn't quite meet the expectations of people. Now they get to try again or re-release or reconsider what that needs to look like. So, you know, I think that's an interesting piece of it. Do you see a lot of what I'm saying here? Do you agree?
I do. And first off, I want to just say, I like that you're talking about rolling a mallet when it used to be mallet-ish for you. You didn't really want to be the mallet guy, but I kind of like that you're talking about people looking at mallets and appreciating what they could do for golfers. I agree with you. And we see, you know, you mentioned Bettinardi. I think PXG has one, Evenroll has one. And if you look at Axis, was it Axis or Axis One? They had something that was idea was along the same lines when they had like the Justin Rose putter, and that just didn't take off. I mean, it wasn't there. And now we are, and we're seeing some more mainstream shapes coming into it.
That's a really interesting example, because Axis visually was, you know, do you remember back in the day, Bettinardi had an insane looking putter that was really different, probably 10 or 15 years ago. And it just looked like a giant, well, I want to use the word mallet, but like a meat mallet, you know what I'm talking about? This huge thing. I can't even describe it. I wish I had the correct, the model heads. This is what happens when we don't actually prepare specifically for the things we say. I'm going to back up one more time and then we're going to actually continue this discussion. Every time Dean comes on, I have 10 things I want to talk about. We cover maybe one. So not surprising that I don't have these things on hand, but I want to circle back on that, because that Bettinardi, you use it and there was a great benefit to it. And by you, I mean, I didn't touch it. I was using a blade, of course. Actually, I think at that time I was using
my hand drawing of it.
That's exactly what it was. but you know, if you were using that putter, it was because it was successful. If it wasn't successful, it sat at home. And there was a couple guys who I used to play with back in the day who had a couple of them. And it was like, you could tell they were either playing well with it or they didn't want to be seen with it, was the argument. So then Axis comes out and they have this sort of crazy looking putter that people are looking at. And I'm like, man, you better put that thing well. Otherwise you're going to get heckled big time. But that seems to be going away. Like the idea that the bigger the head cover in the bag, the worse the putter is sort of unrealistic. And, you know, I'm like setting the tone, because I think it's really fair to what a lot of people's perspectives are, right, wrong, or indifferent. Whereas now it's like, well, you can use whatever putter you want. But the only time I have the freedom to really grief you about it is if you just don't make putts. And then it's like, go get fit, you loser.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go get fit to one of those fancy mallets.
It's one of those things. I think performance is starting to trump everything else. I used to have a cure putter that was like that big, and I would make a lot of putts with it, and I would have really good speed control with it. And I used to get heckled for it all the time because look at that thing. And once you start not making as many putts, like you say, it kind of just goes away because, all right, I've lost confidence in you. You're not doing anything for me at this point. But now I think you're right. There's the point where performance trumps out, and it's come to the putters, which is interesting because I feel like whenever we have a poll on the THP forum, we ask people what club does looks matter the most. And everybody seems to always gravitate towards putter. But now with all these different mallet shapes that are out there in different designs, I this could be just in my imagination. I feel like the stigma of that stuff is all going away and people just want to lower their scores and make more putts.
Well, I don't think it's kind of. I think you're absolutely correct because think back. I mean, we've both been on the forum for 15 years now. So you think back to when we first started, like there's no way people would look at these putters and think that's normal. That makes sense. You're one of the regular people. They would think, you know, really loud things, and it's not meant to be, you know, mean or anything like that. It's just, there was a style that was around, and, you know, as people slowly adapted to it, suddenly it's like, okay, there's a real good reason for a lot of this. And there's also why I think a lot of companies are, and maybe not a lot, there are companies who are looking at finding ways to make blades elevate the amount of MOI, let's say they have, because there's an understanding that some people just can't get over looking down at a mallet, but they don't want to lose out on the benefits of it. So I'll give you a good example. The square to square, that's the double wide. It's like they picked three shapes. There's no reason they picked that one shape because people were overly accepting of mallets. They picked that shape to say, hey, blade guy, give it a try, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. Because I mean, even though the other two shapes that they went with, the seven and the jailbird are highly popular, there is that guy out there that won't touch those putters because he wants something that's more traditional looking. And that double wide, even though it's, you know, square to square, the shaft goes in behind the face instead of on top of the flange. You know, they're going to look different, but there's going to be a comforting design when they look down at it to see just the blade sitting there.
Yeah. How niche do you think this putter style is? The idea of straight back and straight through. I remember the obsession of the number nine, that half moon that had like toe hang for days. I mean, I'm sure we both owned one at one point just because everyone else had
three
one
of them just down that way.
When in reality, that amount of opening and closing is pretty detrimental for a lot of putting strokes. I don't think square to square or that concept is less inclined to be supportive, but my question is, how niche do you think this really is? And let me add a secondary component to that. Do you feel like the other companies coming in and getting involved and saying, like, we have our own version, do you think that makes life harder for Lab, or do you think it makes it easier because now people are being introduced to the concept?
Well, I think for, I'm going to answer them in reverse. I think for Lab, it gives them a little more credence to what they've been preaching for a while. So they're, in terms of the golfer who's looking for that zero torque putter, they've probably seen more Lab ads on YouTube or whatever kind of social media they use than they have seen something for like the Odyssey square to square or the PXG one that came out. So they probably see that idea and think, oh man, this company has been at the forefront of this, at least lately. You know, obviously Odyssey had the toe up putters years ago, but I think that's going to build some credence to Lab. The thing that's going to be interesting is when you look at price, because Lab's prices are here and the square to square is down here.
So, barrier to entry is a really interesting one. Yeah.
Yeah. So if somebody's going to want to jump in and experiment, they're probably not going to want to experiment with the, if they go the custom route with the $600 putter, they're probably going to want to experiment with the $300 putter.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. The other thing is, how much of it is marketing? I mean, You look at toe up as a good example. You also look at like backstrike as a good example. They were both looking back during the time. It was never like this idea is similar to something you've seen before. It always felt like this idea is different than what you're used to seeing. You know what I mean? Now that you have all these companies considering this and all these companies saying like, this is the logic here. This is a style now. It's not just an idea.
And when you talk about backstrike and going to what you said earlier about putters that look different, I'm sorry, those backstrike, but they were hideous. The backstrike dart putters, they were bad. I gotta say they were bad. Toe up at least brought in a couple other designs that were familiar. They actually had a toe up number 9 shape, which was really interesting.
It's the one that always comes into my head. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the one. Funny story about those. I remember interviewing Austin Rollison when he was at Odyssey, when they came out with those putters, and there was a putter rack of about 8 or 9 of them behind us. And somebody, while we're interviewing him at the PGA show, somebody walks by and bumps into it and knocks all the putters down. He's just like, so do we stop or just keep going? Like, whatever you want to do, Austin, we can edit it out. Let's go.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's just, there was a really different look. And I think Axis is a good example of that too. Like you look at that putter and it's just different, but now you have all these companies doing the same idea or the same sort of logic around it. And suddenly it's not just, oh, that's their idea or that's their style. Now it's like, oh, this is an actual, just like a mallet is a style or just like a blade is a style. Suddenly this concept is very much welcomed rather than individualized, you know?
Yeah. I think it's cool to see it expanding. And like you said, it's not going to be just company A's profile or company A's idea. It's going to be a little more, I think, wide reaching and not as niche, but I think for the time being, it's still going to be that kind of market that the same guy wants to play like the mini driver. It's there. We all know it. It's cool, but there's other options out there that are a little more traditional and could work for so many people. You know, watching the guys at the Granddaddy, how many of them ending up with that putter, that square to square putter in their bag. That was a little eye opening to me because they all got fit for their putters. And that was just one that just kept appearing for people.
Yeah. Well, I've had the benefit of doing a number of fittings for putters, as well as using the Blast Technology had a collab with TaylorMade at one point. So I could see like a lot of the stuff going on during my stroke. And it was really telling about how little face rotation I have going back and going through. It's like, okay, there's a lot of things that I shouldn't use now, knowing that. And, you know, seeing some of this additional information, I think people are more likely to benefit from these things if they go and take a look and don't just roll a putter, because usually people will tend to lean towards what they're comfortable with, even if it doesn't really align them correctly, or they might put a not as nice of a roll on the ball. Most of the time, I think it's reasonable to assume that most of the time when people try out a putter, they're not trying it out on a Sam Putt Lab or, you know, something that actually shows data. They're just putting in their hand, dropping a ball down and trying to putt with it, right?
Yeah, no. And for a putter of this style, you need time. And I think you really need to buy into it because it's different. It's not something like you say, you go to a store, you hit 6 or 7 putts and you're just like, but you know what? This one, just the shape looks better. It's more traditional. It's more what I'm used to. I kind of like that better. I think with these kind of style, whichever brand you go with, I think you really have to give it time and really kind of buy into the system, so to speak.
Yeah. One of the funny things about putters, especially when you change the style or even the neck or shape or even the alignment aid, is each one of them you aimed slightly differently with. I would say it's less common with something like a driver or an iron, but the second you put a variable down on a putter, you have no idea where you're aimed. Your brain can tell you you're aimed somewhere, but you're probably not, you know, especially if you switch up models. So then they go to the putting green and they're like, all right, I'm going to try this thing. And they miss all 5 to the right. And they're like, oh, you know, this makes me putt it to the right. But if you look behind them, they're actually aimed to the right. Whereas they normally like, because they would normally aim left to putt right. You know what I mean? So they're really aimed correctly, just that not based on what they normally game. And I'm talking about myself here. I'm super guilty of that.
I had a putter fitting years ago with a Seymour rep in Connecticut. And he was telling me when we were going through this fitting and trying different shapes that depending on if it was like a square back or a rounded, he's like, rounded people aim more. And I'm going to get it backwards probably, but he said rounded people tend to aim more to the left, and the square back people tend to aim more to the right. He's like, so when people come in, and I always kind of peek at what they're rolling, and then I could give them something that's a little more comforting to them, or I could really, you know, give something to shock the system and just see what happens. And then if he's like, and then if I do that, I could always bring them back to something that we have that's a little more in line with what they have and see if they're rolling putters different.
Let me challenge you on this and sort of change it up a little bit. We've talked a lot about putters that shock the system and, you know, how that may have a negative impact. I still kind of think that putters are the product that are most capable of changing from a visual perspective for golfers than anything else they play. And I'll concede that offset on an iron is a bit challenging, but for the most part, if you change the shape of something dramatically, I would bet the putter is the safest place to do it. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, that's a good one. The safest place to do it with the putter. Yeah, I think I'd probably agree with you.
Like, I bet you could put a regular golfer, you could put 80% of irons in front of them, and assuming they don't play Endo Forge mini blades, you know, they're probably comfortable with adapting to most of them. Not a real significant impact, but then you change that one subtle thing about it, whether you go real extreme small, real extreme big, change the offset a little bit. I would imagine drivers are more visual for them, where you have the amount of shape, or if you change the overall shape of that, or add loft or something, that could have a really negative impact. I would think putters are the place where they could be most confident in the change.
You could get more experimental with the shape of the putter. Yes. I'm with you there.
So more willing to swap.
Like this past year, I reviewed a set of Tour Edge, was it the E524 irons? And that's their Tour Edge's ironwood design. And that's nothing like I've ever really played at all in my life. You know, it had more offset, it was a longer blade. They really were essentially hybrids all the way up through the wedge. And that was a little bit more jarring coming from
example.
It's an extreme example. So that was something that, you know, you used to be an equipment reviewer. So you're used to just swapping things in and out when you have to, you kind of become numb to it. But that was one where I looked down at it and I was playing a set of Mizuno 923 forged. And then I reached in the bag and grabbed an 8-iron and it was this big Tour Edge ironwood, and it was so different. I had to look at him like, oh man, this is something. And I could see that being really jarring to people. Like you say, if you have that person out on the range and you're trying to the ultimate style demo day and you're trying to give them all of these different irons, if they're not playing something that has a thick top line or offset, or, you know, has that junk in the trunk that you see at a dress, they're probably not going to gravitate towards that iron or something like the TaylorMade Stealth Stealth HD irons. They're probably not going to go towards anything like that if they're used to playing something that's like a P790, so keeping within TaylorMade family there, I guess.
You know, as we're talking through this, I'm starting to change my mind a little bit on my perspective. So maybe this would be a fun
it's
one.
What I'm here for, chaos.
Well, you mentioned back when you were a writer, and I specifically remember, because that was back when it was you, myself, and James doing a lot of the homepage writing on THP. And I think my primary argument was always, whoever gets the putters, I'm great with it as long as it's not me, because I never wanted to change my putter. So maybe it isn't that way. Maybe I'm actually quite the opposite with that. So I want to bring this one to the forum. Dean and I will be on there on Friday to argue or agree with anything you say, especially talking about how much better the right side of this video is than the left. But you know, this could be a really fun one. Do you think you're more capable of adapting to your rights that way?
Well, I'm confused.
Rights that way. whether you're more capable of adapting to a new set of irons, a new set of or a new driver, a new fairway wood, or you can easily adapt to a putter. What you're more comfortable changing up with? I was originally thinking shape, but we can go pretty much all the way on that and just saying shifting out in total. That's a pretty interesting one.
Yeah, that should be a good one. I like it.
You know, we haven't talked about one of the big things that is dropping this week, and I know you've been busy and you're drinking coffee right now because of it, I believe. But there's some new product coming from Cobra that you've been working hard to share the story on. You guys can check out the THP homepage as well as a forum to learn more about this product, but tell me all about it. 2025 Cobra sounds pretty wild.
Yeah. So by time this goes live, Cobra would have launched, yesterday, the Cobra DS Adapt lineup, which is, it's really wild. So they have, if you want to start with drivers, they have four different drivers in the lineup. They have an LS, an X, a Max K, and a Max D. So obviously Max D is for draw. You know, the X is like the perfect balance of the guy that's looking for speed and forgiveness. LS is low spin, but the one for them this year that's really new is that Max K, and that is their first venture into the 10K MOI discussion.
Interesting. It's been an interesting year for the 10K story, hasn't it? I feel like it wasn't openly welcomed at the start of 24.
It seemed like it was almost mocked a little bit at the beginning of the season, and now we're seeing other companies, you know, Tour Edge came out with a 10K driver. Now Cobra's got a 10K driver. And, you know, one thing that Cobra has kind of hit on is they were able, by not being first, they were able to observe the market a little bit and to examine some other heads and to see what they can make better at 10K. And so one thing they're focusing on is their 10K driver, or their Max K, I guess we should call it their official name, the DS Adapt Max K, is that their big forgiveness is going to be heel toe instead of north south. So if you're heel toe, it's going to be a really good forgiving driver. It's got a much more neutral ball flight than some of the other 10Ks out there, and it's going to have a little bit more speed as well. So it's not just generated towards the slower swing speed player. They've been testing it. They've got guys with high swing speeds, you know, in your range, hitting it and having it, you know, taking the benefits of the stability and the lateral forgiveness.
Yeah, the lateral forgiveness is, I think, the piece of the equation that not enough people talked about. I tend to talk about diminishing returns on a lot of stuff, whether it's, you know, how spinny do I want a golf ball, or how much do I want a ball to compress, are two really good examples, very visual examples you can present. I guess it's not really any different with something like an iron. How forgiving do you want an iron to be? If you're a worker of the golf ball, that diminishing return comes pretty quickly when you try and hit a draw and it goes dead straight to the right. It's like, okay, maybe this isn't exactly what I'm looking for. The whole conversation around 10K was like, all right, what are the benefits and who does it really benefit? So the guy who hits it like toe side with a little lazy draw, but he always starts it to the right, like, you know, maybe that's not the perfect head for them because that's what he's used to and that's what he's looking for. But the guy who hits it on the toe, then on the heel, then in the middle, and then on the toe again, maybe that's where we really start to have this conversation. And I actually have a decent story on that. We were at a simulator this past weekend and I watched a guy hit two straight drives that were closer to the adapter than the center of the club face with his driver. Then he hit one on the toe and then he hit one dead middle. And then he hit one again on the heel. And I'm like, this is wild. We had another friend there. He was laughing. He goes, I've never seen anything like this. The simulator didn't mind it too much. They give him some pretty good results, but you know, this is the kind of person that 10K is designed for, right? This maximizing benefits across the face.
And do you know what kind of driver head he was playing? And you don't have to say brand specific, but was it something like an LS driver, or was it something that was supposed
It was one of like the baseline models. I don't think it was a Max of any kind, but it was more like a baseline model.
Okay. Yeah, it's Yeah, the 10K stuff has been interesting, and you talk about spin. Cobra's saying that theirs is going to be lower spin than some of the other ones out there, and we'll see how it's received. I mean, at this point, it would have been out for, or at least talked about for, 24 hours by the time this show launches.
Let's be honest, it's been talked about for a while now. Thanks.
Well, yes,
list, but no longer in black and white photos, at least in this case. So what's the story on Adapt? Why did they go with DS Adapt?
So DS Adapt, you know, it stands for the Dark Speed Adapt, and they've got a big part of it is their adaptive weighting across the line. So, you know, anyone who's been familiar with Cobra drivers the past few years has heard about Power Bridge, which is that, you know, there's a little weight right here in the front. And on the DS Adapt, if you look at the LS and the X heads, so the 9-degree model has that power bridge. If you go to the 10.5, it does not. The weighting is completely different based on the loft. So the theory on that is that the golfer that's going to look at that 9-degree head in both of those models is going to be the guy who wants to hit it lower, and he wants a little more spin and a little less spin, and a little more speed. Meanwhile, the guy who is going to go for the higher lofted head is looking for, you know, some additional launch properties and something a little more forgiving, a little more stable. So they took the 6 grams or so from the power bridge, moved it towards the back. And as somebody who played the LS model last year of Dark Speed, I totally get that, because I played a 9-degree head and I was very open about it on the forum. I thought it was the longest driver that I could hit all year. It was a speed monster when I caught it right. Like my best drives, hands down, were with that driver. But on days where I was a little bit off, it was not pretty.
Yeah, it's interesting how the change comes at the 9, then 10.5, because I think, once again, looking back a decade, I mean, that the 9.5 today feels a lot like 8 degrees years ago. Like, people are way more comfortable playing 9.5 today than they were playing 8 or playing 9.5 back in the day. So, you know, I think it's a really interesting split, because to your point, like, 9.5 is the guy who wants to hit it lower and isn't afraid of working that that low setup, whereas the guy who needs a little support is going to lean into that 10.5. Maybe even higher.
Yeah. And when you think of like the spin profiles of them, so you'd have the LS 9-degree is going to be like your uber low spin monster, then the LS 10.5, and then the X 9, and then the X 10.5. So even it's two heads, it's really four distinct driver heads and driver setups. But
interesting.
Loft aside, what they've got also now is they've changed the adapter.
Yeah, the adapter is like, I have the benefit of being on both sides of the conversation, whether it's on the forum or, you know, in other places, but I feel like this has been a discussion that's been ongoing a lot, that this new adapter is absolutely wild, but I haven't really seen it. What's the story?
It is wild. So it's a dual cog adapter. It's got 33 different settings on it, and on each driver. If you can see that or not, if I put my hand behind it, maybe there's a QR code. Where are we? There we are.
Yeah. Gotcha.
That'll link you to a fitting app within Cobra. So if you don't know what you're doing out there, or if you can, it's pretty cool that, you know, we saw a demo of it. You can put in like where your ball flight is. So if you're missing, if you take 3 or 4 shots and you're missing on one side, you can kind of figure out which spot you need to go in just by correcting it. But wow. I've been a guy who has been very anti Titleist adapter. I'll say it. I've been very, I understand that they have up until now, they've had the most settings available, but you needed that pamphlet, or you needed the chart to know what was going on, because knowing what A1 or A3 are doing, it's not, the adapter doesn't tell you. On the Future Fit adapter, and again, let's see if you can see those, it does tell you on each ring what is happening to the loft and the lie. Wow. So you'll have a loft. When you line it up, you'll have 2 loft spots and 2 lie spots. You add those 2 numbers together, and that tells you exactly what the setting's going to be.
Huh.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to use the app.
I was going to say, I think the debate of too many settings has always been a weird one. I think the argument of let's just have a bonded driver versus give me, you know, 16 or 33 options to get perfectly fit and set up. I've never understood the one side of the argument. My thoughts are we're all different. We're also all looking for a really good reason why we played like garbage that day. And if that means a 20-minute range session to put it on a setting we've never tried before to fix everything, quote unquote, is, you know, a good thing. But the other part of that is I don't think adapters are necessarily designed to be constantly messed with. I think the idea that there is a little bit of a challenge to that, you need to settle down, internet.
Oh, come on, man. We change that adapter 3 or 4 times during the round. Let's go. There's no 20-minute range session.
But that's just it. First of all, that's illegal, sir. I hope you're not posting those scores. But, you know, what I always appreciated about the more confusing adapters was once you've got it on that setting, you don't really think about it after that. Whereas I feel like if you get to an adapter that's super obvious, like, oh, I'm going to drop a degree and open the face up a little bit, and I know exactly what that's doing because it says it right here. I mean, there is a level of overanalysis there that exists that you will get brutalized by subtle tweaks in your golf game. And, you know, I'm very firmly in the set it and forget it perspective. And to have this many options, this might be a point where I might try a couple more than I probably should, but at least you get confident in the setting that works best for you. And especially if you go get fit and they get you into that right setting and then you just leave it the hell alone for a while, I think it's probably the best play.
I will say the one driver that I had that was adjustable that I never tinkered with was the Titleist 917 D2.
Okay.
Went and got fitted for that. If you remember, it had like the battery weight on the inside, and I mm-hmm. never wanted to risk dropping the screw and losing it. So I had the weight on the inside that was pushed. This was a wild fitting, by the way. Had the heavy weight pushed towards the toe. It was an 8.5-degree head, and they put me in, I think it was C1. So 70, 3/4 degree down and loft and open. So it was a 7.75-degree driver head with the heavy weight in the toe. And they were just like, try to hook it. And I could never hook the thing. Everything was straight. So I never tinkered with that driver.
Yeah.
Ever since that, I tinker all the time.
That's funny because I have a Titleist fitting story of when I got fit years ago at TPI. I was bombing the ball in A1, like as good as I'd hit a driver. He goes, all right, I'm going to try one little thing here. And he changes one setting on the adapter, puts it back in my hands, and I just start spraying everything to the right. He goes, give me that back. He puts it back. I hit it 2 more drives. They were both perfect again. He goes, never, ever, ever change your setting. I was like, oh, okay. I guess I'm not an adapter guy. Good to know.
They scrubbed all the settings and numbers and letters off of the adapter for you so that you would never touch it again.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, it is funny how just the subtle tweak to the visual at address will change the way you go about hitting the ball. But, you know, these are all rabbit holes we could go down for forever. I love the idea that Cobra is not afraid to try new things. But it also seems like the 10K conversation, the adapter conversation, they've been really poised and patient with how they're going about it. That's the vibe I got from both of these. Not really reactionary, but I there's a chance Yags and Hose will listen to this, so I don't want to toot their horn too much and say revolutionary, but very much in control of their decision making.
Well, I expect one of those two to be on soon to talk about this product. Okay. I don't know when. I'm not your scheduler. Yeah. If you would have bumped me for them, that would have been fine.
I still have time. Let's see what they're doing tomorrow.
You can. You could just put this one right in the trash. It's perfectly fine. Yeah, no problem. I'm the same thing. I don't know if what they've got is revolutionary, but there's a lot of promise to the talk about it, about how they're approaching 10K versus some others. And I think that's a good thing because 10K is not all the same. There you go. That's the statement.
That's a big one. I hope people really latch of all the stuff we've said, and I'm very generous with the word stuff. I hope they latch onto that the most. I get a couple quick hitters for you since you've been busy writing all year long, supporting the folks on THP who are interested in reading about product. Again, go check his work out over there. Did there feel like there was a big winner this year in 24? Is there something that really stood out to you?
Clubhead wise, for me, I mean, I already said I thought the Dark Speed LS driver was the fastest and longest one that I hit. I thought AI Smoke Max was like a great blend of everything. That was the other driver that was in the bag for quite a bit. Yeah, you know what? It was just another solid year. Mm. You know, it was the second year of RTX 6 wedges that held up for a 2-year cycle. They still go toe to toe against anything else. I thought Opus wedges were pretty good as well. Just did some little testing. It was a good year for golf ball, I thought. Chrome Tour was really good.
You know, I noticed as I was looking up the things you were doing this year, you did quite a few articles on golf ball decorations this year.
Yes. Yes.
What's your take on that? Is that getting obnoxious? Do you love it?
Oh, I love it. I mean, there's some designs that are just like, no, thank you. But I loved it. Like the last one I think I wrote about was the Callaway ugly sweater golf balls.
Yeah.
And that would just hit. My family does an ugly sweater Christmas every year. I wear the same one every year because I'm cheap. So there's that. It just works.
It's a Star Wars one.
Yeah. I'll just buy some golf balls and glue them to me. You know, we just saw the introduction the day we're recording this of the Pabst Blue Ribbon Bridgestone golf balls, which I think is such a killer collaboration.
Yeah.
So I'm into it. I like what these companies got. I know TaylorMade's done a bunch of graphic golf balls this year as well, and some of those have been really nice designs too. So, if there's a way to bring a little more fun out there, I think these designs are meant to be fun.
Yeah,
most of them are limited editions, so they're here today, gone tomorrow. But yeah, I'm for them. I used to not be a Truist fan. I wanted just a solid golf ball. I've turned. I'm changed.
I've evolved. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you said they're more fun, because anytime I want to stress my golf partners out, I'll put a ball like that in play. And thanks to having an almost 9-year-old, I have a plethora at my disposal anytime I need one, just to mix it up. It no longer has to be a bright pink golf ball. Now it can be a ball with a giant wrap around it or something like that. You know, all these different options. I bought my son, Callaway has those new balls. They're like, are they gradients or are they speckles or something like that, where there's like a full wrap of color around it? And I put one of those in play, and you could see them. One of them was just tweaking. He's like, please stop hitting that ball. You know, so just having a good time with that and mixing it up. It was there one huge surprise this year for you, or a technology that came out that was like really surprising?
I'm trying to think. So like iron wise, at towards the end of the season or end of the summer, I should say, spent some time at Ballyhack, shameless plug, with the King Tech irons and the King Tech X, which the King Tech X, the lofts are like crazy strong. Mm. But you hit the ball and the ball just rockets straight up in the air. It's absolutely amazing at what they can do with that. And then on the flip side, that same range session, we were testing with some of the Callaway Tie Fusion, which is different from the Apex, the 200 and a 300 series. And they're very completely different irons, but they were both so fun to hit. I think of like the latest stuff, those were two products that kind of hit home.
So that like iron area right now, I've been really pressing on the idea that we're about to experience the year of the iron. If we haven't already, like I love when companies all sort of find one or two things that really separate themselves, and whether they're not getting ahead of each other is not really the concern, but rather how they're competing with themselves previously. Things like when I had when I had Yags come on to talk about the limited irons, and then you know
I was trying not to mention those because I didn't want to cry.
Well,
those irons are so cool,
but they're crazy, right? They're crazy what they do, and the guys who have been endlessly talking about them on THP have been so fond of what they've experienced with them. But then they come up with these new irons, and all I could do is ask, like, are you a little bit afraid that they're going to be shadowed by the absolutely ridiculous concept irons you just brought out? And the perspective was no, they're going to stand on their own merit and be good irons. And that's what you've clearly stated here.
Yeah. So, and they really are. I've hit some of the limited irons too. And I hit two of the best, like, back-to-back six iron shots, like an hour apart from each other, because it was during a regular round, that I think I've ever hit in my life. Because you know me, I can't stand hitting long irons. And for me, a long iron starts pretty much at the six. I try to avoid the five. And I hit these irons. I'm just like, man, it's just so bad. So I didn't want to mention them because I didn't want to get a tear to my eye, because they're like the dream set right now.
Sure.
But yeah, tech story-wise, you're talking about 3D printed irons. That's wild to me that we've come to that.
Yeah. And it gets me excited to think what's next, especially when you look at something like a Thai Fusion, where it's like, you know, this iron's supposed to be punishing and mean, and it's kind of the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I haven't had the privilege of hitting limited yet. So I'm really looking forward to that crazy moment, not just sort of living vicariously through the stories that we're reading on THP about them. But yeah, I think the idea that irons have had a huge step up this year and may continue to go that direction is pretty awesome, considering how often we use them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously we can't give away too many secrets. There's going to be some fun sets coming out. And I think you're right. It could be, we always say it's the year of the driver, because the driver always gets like the most tech and the most eyeballs. Yeah. It could be the year of the iron coming up, because there's some good stuff out there.
Well, it's definitely not the year of the bank account, I'll tell you that much.
I don't know when that year is. Haven't seen it yet.
I wanted to talk a bit about tour golf. We kind of spent a lot of time on other things, which is okay. I think being that it's in the wraparound, I'd love to have you back on before things really kick up in 2025 to talk tour, because I'm going to make a concentrated effort of actually caring again about watching tour golf, if that's possible. I don't know if people still do that or not. I see some posts on social where they do still play, but yes, that's terrible. But let's leave that for another show. Is there anything, just burning on your mind right now? Anything you want to share, or ideas or anything like that?
Well, if you want to get you back into tour golf, we can always do a like a Discord watch party, like we've done with Yankee Blue Jay games in the past.
That's a dangerous game.
It is. We could always do that.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we'll do the Yankees Blue Jays thing again. That was dangerous.
We won't be watching Juan Soto, I can tell you that. not bitter, not upset at all.
Well, okay. You know, neither of us can go outside and play golf right now, so we'll just be cranky together.
Yeah, cranky old men. It's where we are now, Dan.
15, all right, my friend.
15 years together, we're cranky now.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been an adventure. I really enjoy the perspective and appreciate the work you guys put in on the homepage. Super fun to have you on and talk about some of these new products that I haven't even read about. So you got the leg up on me there. And then I really hope the conversation about the putters goes back to the forum, because you've got a really interesting perspective on that and have had over a year to apply some of this tech logic to your game. So, you know, hearing the perspectives of everyone is going to be a lot of fun. So take that conversation in the forum if you're interested. We'll have obviously this out there to be welcome to discuss. And if there's nothing else, Dean, we'll wrap up.
No, I think we're good to wrap up, Dan.
All right, buddy. Well, hey, if you go to bed, drink your coffee and go to bed. That's a good idea. If you guys are playing golf this weekend, have a great time. I might play, but it's going to be indoors on a simulator that I don't agree with at all. So, you know, clearly I'm better than what that thing says. There's no doubt about it.
Me too. Thankfully for me, that one's in the garage, but that's why I don't have to go far.
Fair enough. Well, hey, if you do get to golf this weekend, have fun. Tell someone they're good at golf. I guarantee you they need to hear it, even if it's only one shot. We'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.